Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to Club Shear. I have to pick some different intro music, I think. I don't know. Oh boy. Welcome to the Off the Wall Podcast on YesNetwork.com and Blog Talk Radio live right now. Before we get things underway with my special guest today, Seth Everett, we have to start. I was going to tweet this, but it takes too many characters to tweet it out. You know, SNL has these hosts that have been on five times, and they get them these nice red velvet smoking jackets with the number five emblazed on them. I think we have to get you one for how many times you've been on this podcast.
That'd be nice. A nice little jacket.
Smoking jacket.
Well, mate, how about this? This is the way you would reward me. Just let me pick your new theme song.
Okay.
Because, you know, the guy I've been working with, the only music show I do is about a guy currently named Prince, and I have a feeling we could come up with some funky stuff.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. I mean, it's not like I don't like the Club Sheeran, but which I picked myself. I went through a lot of music, and I picked that one. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell I was thinking. But I just figured something that would bump and something that would get people pumped up for the show. But then, you know, when you have something that, you know, as I get serious here, it's like Sirius is Boston last week, and you don't really know how to work Blog
right.
Talk Radio, and the, you know, you're trying to play. You're trying to play the national anthem from the Bruins game, and that stupid music is on in the background, ruining it. You know, it's time to get a new intro song,
understood.
I think. But anyway,
understood.
I digress.
Yeah,
we
have a big conversation that's not going to be on this show about that.
Yeah. Before we start, I just want to send out a couple of shout-outs here to a couple followers on Twitter. I pay attention, boys, and I just want to give you credit where credit is due. Big Walt Diesel and Chris Wassel, THW. I don't know if you're listening live or you listen to the archive version on YesNetwork.com, but those guys retweeted immediately after I said you were going to join me today. So I just wanted to Twitter's so much sometimes – always falls into the negative, but you know I get humbled from time to time when the people that you know appreciate what I do and follow me and listen to this podcast. So I just want to give credit where credit is due and thank you guys and women out there that are listening to the Off the Wall Podcast, whether it be live here on Blog Talk or archived on YesNetwork.com. Now moving on
I'm an iTunes
blog
talker. Yeah.
Yes. iTunes as well. You can download it. And it's a pretty good price, too. It's free. So,
and it helps put me to sleep.
Yeah.
Oh,
there you go.
Did I go too far?
It's kind of like Enya. Well, if the gloves are off, we can start talking about the devils.
Oh. What do you want to do?
Sayonara.
All right, speaking of Twitter, fine. Speaking of Twitter, this is how Twitter is ridiculous. Ranger fans.
Hit me.
Is eliminating the Devils in a regular season of 48 games the retribution for getting eliminated in the conference finals last year?
Let me ask you this.
Does winning on that Saturday afternoon that 10 people saw, because there's a million other things going on in sports, it was Sunday afternoon, does that replace the Henrique overtime goal?
Two years ago,
you would have told me I could go to the Stanley Cup finals and beat the Rangers, and then the next year I wouldn't make the playoffs? You'd sign for that in a second, Ranger fan.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to put it into perspective.
So lame.
But you have to put it into perspective. You know, this is a team that has obviously more cups than the Rangers since 1982 or whenever the Devils came over here from Colorado. They have three. The Rangers have just the one. They just knocked the Rangers out of the playoffs last year with a chance to go back to the finals, even though the Rangers, I think, would have been a sacrificial lamb, just as the Devils were with the LA Kings. So the Ranger fan has a lot of hatred, has a lot of pent-up frustration and emotion towards the Devils and the Devil fan. So any chance, Seth, that a Devil – not me, per se, because I don't think that erases what the Devils did to the Rangers last year. I don't. I think what the Devils did to the Rangers last year erases in a little bit 1994.
Sure it does.
Absolutely. And
that's
we talked
retribution.
About that. Right, and we talked about that before on this podcast. But at the same time, it doesn't speak to the same volume as what the Rangers did on Sunday, obviously. But if I were to gauge it on, you know, the Spinal Tap volume meter, whereas the Devils' win for a Devil fan last year was at 11, the Rangers' win on Sunday was at a 1. To me, that's where the scale is.
Yeah, it was okay. It was fine. Now, my big Devil story is I took my little kids to the Prudential Center. My 4.5-year-old, and then I found out that my wife had made other plans, and I didn't know that I had my 17-month-old. And I had to make a choice. Do you go with both, or do you not go? And I went with both. Let's just say that was like 6 days at the gym, chasing after them at the Prudential Center. But that's a great method. If you ever want to meet a bunch of cheerleaders, go to a sporting event with two little girls.
Yeah.
Every cheerleader came up to me. Every cheerleader was my best friend that night.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's start after our little Rangers Devils tete-a-tete there with the Brooklyn Nets. Yeah, yes. I know. The Brooklyn Nets. Now, all season long, Seth, I filled in for Sarah Kustak on the sideline.
Sure,
I've done studio work for the pre and
post
game shows.
Games, but yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah, thanks. I take what I can get, buddy. But all season long, whether I was doing the shows or wasn't doing the shows, the one thing about the Nets this year that you could pretty much bank on has been their inconsistency, and especially in the third quarter. Now, I said on this podcast yesterday, and I hate to admit when I'm right, but I was right. I said to the Net fan out there, listen, I would not be shocked that if game two resembles nothing that game one resembled. Now, I put a lot of that on the Nets, but I also put that on the way Thibodeau had the Bulls ready to play in game two. They were 2-for-19 in the third quarter, Seth. They scored 11 points. They were down 1 at the break. They were down 11 after 3.
Well, there were a couple things about it. I mean, a couple of things that I didn't like going into yesterday's game. The first was Mikhail Prokhorov saying they need one more good player. How does the owner say that with the 12 guys that are there right now? Now,
you and I can say
that on a podcast. And
absolutely,
I like Mikhail Prokhorov, and he was my boss for a year, and that's all well and good. But he's not my boss now, and I would tell you, I don't want my owner coming in saying we need one more good player. That is obnoxious gets. The second thing is I don't like Derrick Rose taking warm-ups and doing dunks going in, because I think that affected the Bulls going into game one. You can't watch this kid playing and warming up with the team and then saying he's not mentally in it. That you can't have that. You have to have a mentality that it's, you know, good for the team. And I just thought the mentalities of both these teams were mixed. There was the Bulls in game one and the Nets in game two. And I think that it comes out and it just seems awkward.
Do you think, Seth, now I kind of speculated this before the series started, but Thibodeau's been very hush-hush about Rose. I would not be shocked if the kid is out there throwing down dunks before game one. I would not be shocked, and I don't know why they would do this, but it wouldn't shock me if he ran out of that tunnel and played in Chicago game three.
I mean,
that place would go absolutely nuts.
But I don't believe in that. I don't, and I'm going to throw the Miami Heat into that. I would want him to take the entire summer and be literally 100%, because there's no way he's 100%. If he's 80%, I'm not putting a guy at 80%. For that to be the taste that he takes into the summer, for what? So you beat the Nets and you go to take on the Heat? What are we accomplishing here? And
yeah,
Tom Thibodeau has to realize, big picture, they need the summer anyway for the Bulls to be relevant. They're not relevant right now because I don't give either one of these teams a chance against Miami. And this argument about whether the Bulls beating the Nets, I think this series is much more important for the Nets than it is the Bulls. Because
oh, absolutely,
for the Nets, it establishes the Nets. The Bulls don't need any establishment. They have half a team out there.
Yeah, and they have half a team that isn't 100% as well. I mean, Joakim Noah is playing with the plantar fasciitis, and a spirited game for him last night. He played 29 minutes.
He looks like
double-double.
He has a piano on his back.
Yeah, pretty much. And it looked like they were getting drained towards the end of the game there. When Joe Johnson hit the three to bring the Nets within four, you kind of started to think, have the Bulls run out of gas here? But it was Noah who made four shots in the fourth quarter to help keep the Nets at bay, and it was that Joe Johnson missed three-pointer that could have cut the lead to one that was really that, you know, when you leave the Carrier Dome in Syracuse, you know how you get pushed out of the door. That was really the air being let out of the building at Barclays, and I knew you'd appreciate that one. Yeah.
That's nice. That's what you should have opened with.
Mm-hmm. But how do you, after these two games, it goes back to what I said at the beginning when I started talking about this series, Seth. It goes to the fact that the Nets have been so inconsistent this year. They can look like the best team in the NBA one night, and this was the same thing during the regular season. And, you know, I could hear all the rumors from the Nets higher-up saying that, you know, this team is built for April and May and June. Okay, fine. But your team still looks like it's November and December and January. So I don't know where this series is going to go. I think it's going to be a dogfight. I think they split in Chicago. I think the Nets still end up winning it just because I don't think Chicago is healthy enough. How do you see it playing out?
To be honest with you, I like the Nets in this series, but I probably I don't know if they win two games in Chicago. So they might have to win. You know, I would like to say it's 2-2 coming back here for game five. That's what conventional wisdom would believe. But then if that's the case, then I still don't know if you can win game five and then win again in game six in Chicago. I see them only being able to win one in Chicago. So I think it's 2-2. And then I think you ultimately you'd have to say Nets in seven. And only because I don't think the Nets can win two games at the United Center.
That is a fair point. I tend to agree with you 100%. The Nets just have to steal one in Chicago and find a way to win two out of three on their own floor.
Right, but it's two out of three, and it's not right. That's the difference. It's not a 2-3-2 series. I think a 2-3-2 series would be much different. That's why, you know, in any of these seven game series, doesn't matter what sport you're talking about, the 1-2 split is massive. Because, you know, essentially the Bulls get the home ice, the home court advantage.
I see where your mind is.
Well, it is April. You know, we have gone to the playoffs 14 of the last 16 years.
Yeah. This will not be one of them, though. Anyway, sorry, I had to. But another area where the Nets completely dominated the Bulls on Saturday night was in the paint. They scored 56 in the paint on Saturday and just 30 last night, 15 for 36 they were from the paint. They got to do a better job. You know, Brook Lopez, Andre Blatch, he takes a lot of shots. He was on the floor with Brook Lopez last night. You know, that worked during the season. But when push comes to shove, I want Brook Lopez taking those shots, not Andre Blatch.
Yeah, yeah. Brook's my guy, and he's my comic book buddy. And this is a guy who's really evolved. He looks so much stronger than when I covered the Nets. He has done a remarkable job because we all knew he had the size, but whether or not he had the strength to get points in the paint that way and not rely on a top-of-the-key jump shot, that's a big evolution in Brook's game. There's no question about it.
Seth, I want to switch topics here and hit baseball for a little bit while we have you on. We have another 15 minutes with Seth Everett, that is. It's at @Seth_Everett, two T's. At the end of the name, by the way, on Twitter. The first team I want to ask you about is the Kansas City Royals. I've talked about the Yankees ad nauseum on this podcast. It's time
really?
To give
I'm
it a
going
rest.
On a Yes Network podcast, and we're talking Kansas City Royals?
We're talking Kansas City
did
Royals.
Did Superman
because
fly around the world real fast and turn back
yes,
time? What am I in, an alternate dimension?
That is the second time I've heard that reference this week. I just watched Veep on DVR last night, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus brought that up, and now you have. So,
well, that's
Julia
Louis-Dreyfus learned that line from Seinfeld when George invests all the money and he loses the money, and he says, "Why don't you get your buddy Superman to fly around the world?" Superman can turn back time, and Jerry goes, "Elaine, we've been over this."
Yeah, and George with the cigar and telling them to get whatever they want at the diner and then takes a dollar back from his tip. Just classic
George
episode. But I picked the Royals because, A, they're in first place. I know it's early. They're 10-7. I just want to find out from you. You're a national baseball guy. I just want to know what you think of the Royals possibly sustaining this. You know, they bring in Wade Davis and James Shields, basically two-fifths of their rotation from the Tampa Bay Rays. And not just any two-fifths. I mean, these are guys who are lockdown starters, and they're proving it this year. You know, Davis, who has really, really, really proved himself with the Tampa Bay Rays, is 2-0 this year with an ERA of 2.25, 15 strikeouts and 3 walks. So do you think if the offense, Seth, is able to provide these guys with a smidgen of support that they will be able not to win a division but maybe make a postseason run?
Well, you know, sustaining it, you can't win a division in April. You can lose it in
April. Oh, absolutely not. No, yeah.
I like the additions. I do. You know, it's really funny because this is a team who finally didn't try to pick Atlanta's farm system. You know, the ghost of Kyle Davies right now is mm-hmm. coming into my mind. Their lineup is not as balanced as you would like. But I want to give the Royals credit for doing a couple things. The first one is the Royals were stuck in Boston pretty much from Thursday or from Wednesday night on. And they had an off day Thursday, and then they had all day Friday with the lockdown. And
right.
The Royals were involved in this almost doubly as much as the Red Sox were. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the Red Sox. I thought the Red Sox behavior was just brilliant. To
mm-hmm.
a man, every player said and did the right thing. But the Royals endured that. And they were in the midst of all of it, not knowing when they were getting out. They were hearing rumors. I don't know if you heard this rumor as well, that baseball was telling Oakland not to come. That Oakland, they were saying, you know, check with us before you board your flight. I mean, stuff like that was happening. And here the Royals are in a hotel. Now, granted, they're not, you know, no offense to the Comfort Inn, but they're in a nice hotel. But they were stuck. I'm like, who sponsors this show?
We're safe. We're safe for now. Go ahead.
Yeah, very nice. But, you know, and then they came out, and then over the weekend played strong baseball and won a couple of baseball games and swept that doubleheader. And mm-hmm. for me, to be able to do that and then stay on point and stay on focus, I just think the Royals deserve a lot of credit of that.
And the other team, kind of in the Midwest, in the Rocky Mountain time zone, you'll be hosting a show today from 2 to 5. The Colorado Rockies, have they just been a major surprise to you, or did you feel in spring training that they had a shot to do this?
Well, it's funny. I have a history with the Rockies. They were the first major league team I covered. And this winter, I made a deal where I'm a baseball insider for that station. You know, I'm a fan in Denver. And every once in a while, you know, in spring training, I said to myself, you know, it's easy to watch the Mets, the Yankees, the Phillies, and I live in the Northeast, so it was easy to see. But I really have to pay attention to this Rockies team because the one thing I didn't want to come off as is an outsider. And I looked and I spent a lot of time. I think I watched 6 of their spring games, and
mm-hmm.
I talked to 3 of their players. And I had a whole conversation, and this is the only thing I said right around opening day was the Colorado Rockies are not hopeless. I said they have a lineup that more than half of the National League would trade for. And I said they have 2 starters that I like, Julius Chacin and Juan Nicasio. The
mm-hmm.
other starters, they like Jorge De La Rosa. I didn't. And Jeff Francis is like a poor man's Jamie Moyer. And then at the last weekend of spring training, they picked up John Garland, who had been pitching
right.
well for Seattle. But Garland, if you remember, this is a guy who went to the All-Star game with the White Sox, won a World Series with the White Sox, and the Mariners thought they had too much pitching. Ironically, they were the team that acquired Aaron Harang. And they released him. They had a deal where he could request his release if he wasn't on the big club. They didn't want to mm-hmm. put him on the big club, so they released him. And I said, if you pick up John Garland, who will easily eat 180 innings for you, I said, you that's now 3 starters. So you give me an above-average lineup and 3 starters? And, you know, Chris, they're 13-5, and Wilton Lopez, their big acquisition over the winter, has blown 2 games. They should be 15-3. That's how good, how well they have played. And Walt Weiss, who was a shortstop when my first big league job, he was the shortstop for the first major league team I covered, gets his first chance to manage. And again, you can't win championships in April, but man, you could lose them. And the Rockies have played extremely well. But can I bring up one thing about the schedule?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
There's something wrong with the schedule, and this is something I've been doing for Fox. And I want to make sure this is clear. There's a big myth nationally that the media presumes that cold weather cities can't host April games. That's a bunch of mishigosh. That's nonsense. I brought Yiddish into this show. You like that? What,
uh-huh,
you have
yes.
sponsors? Are Jewish sponsors going to pull
I have
up?
None. Maybe we'll get one.
that's a big myth. Cleveland can host games in April. Minnesota can have games in April. And so can Coors Field. But the schedule has to do a service to these cities and to the sport by scheduling those cities in April. If they're going to have home games, they have to have interdivisional games. Think about what happened on Friday between the Twins and the White Sox. It was 29 degrees when they were going to have first pitch, and they said, screw this, we're not playing in this. And they canceled the game. Why? Because they're scheduled to meet 18 more times.
Correct.
Nine of which
that's
were
a,
in the
that
park.
That is the best point I've ever heard
right.
brought up about this matter. That's absolutely
Why are
right,
the
and
Mets,
that's exactly what they need to do.
Right. Not only did the Mets go to Minnesota, which is ridiculous, but then on top of that, then spent a four-game series
in Colorado.
Right. And now the Braves, and two of those games had to be played in 28 degrees. That's 1 degree less. Than they had
yeah.
at U.S. Cellular Field because the
and
team
they were
don't
shoveling
come back.
The damn field. The players
Sandy
had to
Sandy Alderson. No, Sandy Alderson gets my shovel award. And so my argument is if you just protect the schedule, and let's face it, the schedule should have – you want the Yankee fans want to see the Red Sox, Orioles, and Rays in the month of April anyway. So just make it so that the sport has, for the most part, interdivisional games, and if you're going to give home games to cold-weather cities – the Rockies should be playing the Giants, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and Padres. And then if you did, then this game, they wouldn't be playing a doubleheader this afternoon against Atlanta in a snowstorm? It's ridiculous. I love Katie Feeney and I love the commissioner's office, but oh my God, do they botch that.
Since you brought up Walt Weiss, I immediately thought of this story that I heard Leo Mazzoni tell, and I don't know if you know this story about Maddox and Walt Weiss. Weiss got hit by a pitch. And it was like the third or fourth time he was hit by this specific pitcher. So the game started to go on, and Weiss kind of was sitting there on the bench, and Maddox was still in the game, and he leaned forward, and he goes, Walter, is it time? And Weiss said, yes, it is. And the next inning, Maddox went out there and hit somebody. I just thought that was a great story from Mazzoni on Weiss.
It was a big thing when Walt Weiss was the shortstop. One of the big storylines was the Rockies had a young shortstop named Nefi Perez. That was their
mm-hmm.
shortstop in waiting. Like he was Reyes before Reyes, right? And so when he got the managerial job, you know, he was a finalist, and nobody took him seriously as a finalist this winter because remember they were interviewing Jason Giambi.
Yes,
you remember
I do.
That.
Yes,
and
I
somebody
do.
Asked me on a national show. They said, "So what about the Rockies and Walt Weiss?" I said, "Well, how long before Nefi Perez replaces him?"
Oh boy. All right. Let's talk a little Yankees, I guess. I can't get away from them altogether, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the Royals and on the Rockies as well because
you do know what the
listen,
Y in Yes Network stands for, right?
Yes, I do. I'm well aware of it. They are batting collectively as a team 185 against left-handed starting pitching so far. And, you know, I don't know how much more I could take of Ben Francisco in the DH role.
I just don't. He is awful.
I don't even know. They
nice,
have to make nice up a
guy,
new word
nice
for
guy,
what
but,
he is.
But he is nice guy, but he can't hit. He couldn't hit with Philadelphia last year. He can't hit. I mean, there's no question about it. No, the great
yeah,
statistic,
and, you know,
and I'm sure – oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, the great statistic with the Yankees that I always love is the payroll of the active roster. Even with CeCe Sabathia, it hovers right around $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how many teams have $100 million payrolls that can't win as many times as the Yankees can.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the testament to what they've been able to do so far. Forget the fact that it's $189 million. It doesn't matter all the high-priced superstars. And I'm not interested in who's on the DL. The 25 guys that Joe Girardi goes to battle with are giving you a fight. And that was unexpected.
Oh, absolutely. You can't deny that. The big concern, though, today, you know, is the velocity of CeCe Sabathia's fastball. He hit 89 last night.
That was alarming because Tampa can't hit. And Tampa was, like, knocking the ball at like nothing. That was crazy yesterday. I would be a little concerned about Sabathia, no question. But after the game, he said he was okay. So we'll see.
Yeah, but he said he was okay all last year, too, with elbow problems. And I'm not speculating. I'm not saying CeCe has elbow problems. But still, this is a guy who's going to run out there every fifth day, and he's going to be a warrior. He's not, you know, if he has a little bit of a twinge, he might not even say anything. He proved that last year. When a bunch of these guys, you know, sit down with a hangnail, CeCe Sabathia is going to go out there and battle and try to win a ball game for you. And that is why that guy could play on my team anytime. But it is a little bit alarming to see that he's only getting it up to 89 miles an hour right now. We'll see what happens in his next start. Joe Girardi seems to believe that it's going to go up a little bit. But, you know, you're talking about a guy who was throwing 95-96 when he signed with the Yankees in 2009, and he was throwing that hard in the 6th, 7th inning, and now he can't get it up past 89. So it's a concern. And as you said, a great point, Tampa can't hit. And before you knew it, you know, I'm listening to John and Susan in the car going home, and before you know it, you blink your eyes, they're chasing four after one. And with that lineup
that
against left-handed pitching, you're pretty much saying to yourself, and you were right, especially with Moore on the mound, this one's over. It was over before
though,
it started.
You see how hard it is for the Rays to score four runs, though? I mean, they had to hit four home runs. They don't get anybody on base.
I understand
their
that.
Their lineup
I completely
is
agree with that.
As
and
it is.
Sabathia,
you
yeah,
have to
and
make
Sabathia
four
pitched.
Mistakes. Right.
He pitched the rest of the game.
Mistakes.
He pitched.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable, you know, how CeCe shut him down the rest of the game and the Yankee offense couldn't come up with anything. But Moore's been out of his mind this year. He's 4-0 with a 1.04 ERA. So, you know, it's early. I want to put a little suffix on this podcast. Everything we discuss baseball-wise, it's early. I know. I'm not stupid. Well, some people think I am, but it's early. Anything could still happen. The Royals could finish in last place in the AL Central. The Rockies could finish in last place in the NL West. But what they're doing right now is eye-opening. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think they deserve a ton of credit for what they've done. I think that
not to mention the Red Sox as well.
Yeah. But the Red Sox I thought would be better. I just assumed if you look at just the games that Lester and Buchholz pitch, they're in a great position. I mean, there's no question about it from my standpoint. My attitude for this whole thing has been, I can't call this a positive month because I keep hearing about the setbacks, and you know when Teixeira is going to be swinging, you know, off a tee
right.
And Granderson, and of course what happened with Jeter last week. And to me, this team can tread water with this group, but they need those guys if they're going to make, you know, the acceleration.
Oh, yeah. They can only tread water for so long. Yeah.
Right, and so you're hovering. And you know, do I give the Yankees credit for being 10-8 on April 22nd or 23rd? Yeah, I do. But how much further you can take that, I'm not sure.
I mean,
I'm not going to give them any undue hope. That's not what I can do. Yeah, you just try to be as objective as you can, looking at what the roster consists of.
Right, and Jason Nix is not an everyday player. He's a ball player, but he's not an everyday player, and he's proving that. I mean, the guy has struck out 40% of the time that he's come to the plate this year. Two more last night against Moore. Not that the rest of the lineup was doing anything against him. They only managed two hits last night, but you got a lot of guys in this lineup that aren't everyday players, and they're being exposed. So, you know, when these guys get back, things will start to change because the bench will get stronger, and I think these guys who aren't everyday players will go back to their roles and they'll be more comfortable and everything will, you know, Everything will align. The stars will align. Teixeira will be back. Granderson will be back. Jeter, who knows? A-Rod, who knows? But you get Teixeira and Granderson back into that lineup and back out into the field, and the Yankees are better off. Seth, thank you once again for hopping aboard. We're going to work on that jacket for you with the 5 emblazoned on it. You have like 10 or 12 by now, but you know, we'll base it on 5 appearances. But we're wrapping up here. We have 20 seconds left, so thank you for coming on today.
Yes,
I appreciate
Walter.
It.
Thank you, Walter. Time to go.
All right, brother. We'll talk soon.
You got it, dude.
All right. That's Seth Everett here on the Off the Wall podcast. Don't forget our coverage of the Yankees and Rays kicks off with Yankees batting practice today at 6, and we'll be back with more Off the Wall tomorrow with the NFL draft. See you then.